Hey, welcome to Transform Your Workplace. It's your host, Brandon Laws. Welcome to the show for today. Today's episode is brought to you by Zenium HR. Check out Zenium's learning and development programs. This is how you elevate your team. Zenium has everything that you need to prepare and equip your emerging leaders for success. We've got e-learning, workshops, all virtual. Learn more at zeniumhr.com. All right, today's guest is Dr. Steven Stein. We're diving into emotional intelligence. He wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence for Dummies 2.0. So this is a refresh of the book he wrote many years ago. And we're diving into the importance of emotional intelligence in the modern world of work, especially now that we're so digital. So we talk about effective communication, collaboration, and how to make better decisions. You don't want to miss this great conversation with Dr. Steven Stein. If you like what you heard today, please go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating and review would be awesome too. And feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I love connecting with listeners, hearing what topics are important to you, hearing how you're using the ideas in the show to impact and transform your workplace in a positive way. Thanks for tuning in today. Enjoy the conversation with Dr. Steven Stein. Steve, it's a pleasure to have you on Transform Your Workplace. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Nice to meet you, Brandon. Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So we're going to talk about emotional intelligence and our audience of a lot of HR professionals and leaders that are constantly trying to develop those skills within the organization. So let's step back and define emotional intelligence from your perspective and how it's relevant to creating a positive workforce.
Okay, so there's probably a number of definitions of emotional intelligence out there now. You know, we started working in this field about 25 years ago. There was only one or two, but they all share like three common components, right? One is your ability to be aware of emotions, whether it's your own or other people that you're interacting with. The second is the ability to manage those emotions, whether you're managing your own emotions or someone else's. And the third is the ability to use emotions to help you focus or get things done. That's an area that we work with in high-performing athletes and people like that who really have to be on the ball at a specific point in time.
How important do you think emotional intelligence is for the future, the modern workforce?
I think it's extremely important. And, you know, I've said that at least for 25 years, as long as there's more than one person in the world, you're going to need emotional intelligence. As long as you interact with anyone individually or in groups or in any which way. And it's probably even more important today when we've gone so digital and people are working remotely. These skills are just becoming more and more important.
Yeah, no, I so agree. And I'm curious because we're talking about emotional intelligence for dummies, the second edition. So you wrote that, but you had a first edition. What's changed since you wrote that first one?
Well, we've been doing research along over this period of time, and we changed some of the factors that we look at specifically and which ones we weigh more in certain occupational groups or in certain roles. But we use a tool called the Emotional Quotient Inventory 2.0, the EQI2, which is probably the most widely used in the world for measuring emotional intelligence. And we made a few changes to the way we measure it, again, based on over close to 200 studies that have been published over time looking at this concept.
For leaders who are sort of looking at the landscape of their workforce and they want to measure the levels of emotional intelligence across their workforce, what's the best way to do that? Is it this emotional intelligence quotient that you're talking about?
Yeah, the EQI is really the most effective way. It's research-based. It's being used all over the world in military and governments and corporations and nonprofits. And it really looks at five general areas that break down into 15 specific areas. It looks at self-perception, you know, the way you look at yourself, how you see yourself. Self-expression, we've learned over time that it's really important how you express yourself. If you're a leader, do you hide your feelings or do you let people know what you're really feeling about a situation? We look at interpersonal skills. How good are you at initiating relationships, maintaining those relationships? We look at decision-making. Do your emotions cloud your decision-making because you get over-emotional, or you try and use no emotions, and that can hurt as well. And finally, we look at stress management, the ability to use your emotions to manage stress more effectively.
Of those areas in the research that you've done, are people lacking in one or two of those areas more than the others?
It really varies. I mean, people, we look at it as, you know, if people are high in one area, low in another. We typically, when we use the tool, look at the top three areas and the bottom three areas. So there's always some kind of need for balance in terms of how we deal with these emotions.
When you wrote the second edition, I don't know if it had anything to do with the fact that we came out of a global pandemic and people probably had lower levels of emotional intelligence. I don't know if you've done the research there and if you could tell me anything about like the connection between those two things.
We did. We actually, you know, we've been testing people, several million people that we've tested over time, but we did look at a cohort that we did examine before and after or to the late ends, or late part of the pandemic. And we did find some interesting changes in leaders specifically that we looked at. And one was, just generally speaking, that leaders during the pandemic were paying less attention to their subordinates. They were more concerned with the things going on around them, the pandemic and so on, that they were a bit less attentive to the people around them. On the other hand, they were also more assertive. So they were more likely to tell people what they wanted done, you know, what to do, what I need. So, you know, those were some of the changes that we found. And I think we document some of that in the book.
Many of my colleagues are HR professionals, and I think, especially during the pandemic, they're in emotional intelligence, there's a big empathy component to this, and often that can lead to a compassion fatigue. At least in my experience, that's what I've heard from a lot of people, and they were burned out and stressed out because they're worried about other people's issues because they felt what they felt. Unpack that for me, like that area in particular of emotional intelligence, of just being super compassionate and empathetic, how that can lead to stress.
So one of the things we try and differentiate is empathy versus sympathy, right? They're two different concepts and they're both important, but in different ways. So sympathy is when I actually feel bad about what you're going through. You know, I actually have that feeling. Empathy is more about my understanding of what you're going through, not necessarily feeling it. So it's like walking in your shoes, but I can see it a bit more objectively. So when we learn to make that differentiation and we learn to use empathy appropriately, it tends not to lead to that kind of burnout.
Excellent. From a generational standpoint, are you seeing any connections with levels of emotional intelligence, like one generation better emotionally intelligent than the others?
Well, interestingly, when we look at the cohorts of age, we find that emotional intelligence tends to increase as we get older. And some of it makes perfect sense. You know, we think of older and wiser, but, you know, we become less impulsive. Like impulse control is one of the measures we look at. When we're younger, we want to jump at it, go do it, try something out. When we're older, we're a little more pensive about, oh, should I really do this? Let me think about it a bit more. Also, when it comes to things like problem solving, we get a little bit better or different at doing that, where, again, we use a little bit more patience as we get older.
Since you wrote the first edition and now the second, has your understanding of emotional intelligence changed? Like, have you evolved with the times as well and changed your stance on anything about emotional intelligence and what it can be used for?
Yeah, I think it's constantly changing, but I don't think there's any sort of dramatic change. I've always felt it could be used wherever there are people, basically. And I've always found it challenging. You know, it's obvious that we need it when we talk about salespeople or leaders, where we do a lot of interaction. But I've always been interested in some of the less obvious ones, like a lighthouse keeper or computer programmer, and trying to really find the role of emotional intelligence in those roles.
What are some of the common misconceptions about emotional intelligence that you've heard over the years?
Well, probably one of the biggest ones is people think it means being nice. And it's not about being nice at all. There are emotionally intelligent people that can be not so nice. You know, it's how you express yourself, how you get things across. But it doesn't mean you accept everything and you love everybody. It's not like the old 60s love fest. It's really about being aware of your emotions and managing them and using them. And sometimes I want to look tough and I want to look like I'm angry or upset with what you're doing, because that's more effective in helping me get you on side to what I want you to do. So that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions that we have.
It's interesting because over the years, I've heard a lot of employers talk about like, we need to develop the hard skills and then the soft skills like emotional intelligence. But I'm like, emotional intelligence to me is just like, it's a skill, like just like anything. How do you think employers are changing the way they're trying to develop emotional intelligence and even talking about it inside the workplace?
Well, you know, it's changed dramatically over the years. And, you know, everyone now has heard of the term. When we started out, I remember giving a talk 25 years ago or so in London, England, in front of 300 HR professionals. And after I started into it, this old gentleman stood up and said, if you're here to talk about emotions at work, you're in the wrong place. We don't have emotions at work here in England. So you just get back on your plane and go back to America. You know, it's like we leave our emotions at home. I said, so you sort of cut the brain in half and leave one half at home and the other to work. So it started out that people didn't believe there was a place for these things in the workplace at all. I think now we've changed significantly. We understand how emotions affect our work, affect our interactions with people, and how important it is not to suppress these emotions, but to better manage them, to use them to your advantage, and to make teams more cooperative. You know, how do you work with someone that you don't like? Well, if you're emotionally intelligent, you find ways around that, and you find ways to motivate people, even if they're not your favorite people.
Are there any industries or specific workplaces that were just not embracing emotional intelligence that maybe have changed the way they're thinking about it now and actually see it as a big benefit to their workplace?
It's always surprising to see the areas where this really takes off. Early on, we started doing work with the military, and you figure, boy, these got to be the last people to take into this. But they just latched onto it. We've been working with Air Force, Army, Marines, Top Gun pilots. I've worked with Navy SEALs. It's amazing how the military has picked up on the importance of these skills. Other areas where you're less likely to see it, I remember someone brought us in to look at coal miners and people who work, difficult physical labor kinds of jobs. But, you know, they get into altercations, they get into interesting situations, even in those kinds of workplaces, and found a place for emotional intelligence to help to fit in.
How do you suggest, you know, the people listening to this podcast, a lot of them are HR people who are building training curriculum for their workplaces. How do you think they should go about implementing programs that would help build the skills for their people?
Well, probably, you know, one of the best things or most important things is to get buy-in, especially from the senior levels of the organization. If you don't have the senior management buying in, you know, we've seen this over and over, it gets really hard to implement a program substantially and have it stick. So one thing I found some HR people do really well is they approach the CEO or leader of the organization and hand them a book. Doesn't have to be my book, but a book on emotional intelligence that has some really interesting examples. And sometimes that's enough when they see the data and they see, wow, you know, some of these organizations with emotional intelligence at the top tend to do better. They tend to be more profitable. They have less strikes. They, you know, there's all kinds of data that we've collected showing the advantages of having an emotionally intelligent workplace. So if you can sell the leadership team, get them on board, you're going to go a lot farther in selling it to the organization.
What do you think are some of the key components to an effective emotional intelligence training?
Well, you know, one of the things about training in this area, it's not like just listening to lectures or going to college.
No, yeah, that's what's challenging about it.
Yeah, you got to go out and do it. So that's why coaching is one of the more effective ways. You've got to go out and try something. I want you to interact with this person or talk to someone you don't like. And here's how I want the area of the conversation or direction to go. So you got to go out and do it and try it. Come back, tell me how it went. And then we sort of shape it and change it around. It's very experiential in the learning. So that's probably one of the most effective things you can do in your training.
Of those five areas that you talked about with emotional intelligence, like the self-perception, self-expression, interpersonal relationships, decision-making, and stress management, which of those things from a self-awareness standpoint, like should we work on first? If there's any key areas that we need to start with?
Well, usually it's self-perception. You know, we want to understand ourselves first. We want to know what are our strengths and weaknesses? What am I really good at? What do I excel at? Am I good at listening to people? And what am I bad at? Well, you know, interpersonal relations. I don't like talking to people very much. You know, so to really get a sense of where you're strong and where you're not so strong. And if you can make that awareness, if you can be honest with yourself and really learn what your strengths and challenges are, you're going to go a long way to really improving.
Stress management is an interesting area. So how can leaders use emotional intelligence to better manage stress and anxiety, either in themselves or in the entire workplace?
So managing stress has a number of components to it. Again, one of them is being aware, you know, what are the buttons? What are the things that set you off in terms of your stress? And then there's a whole series of techniques you can use to deal with it. But we, you know, we really recommend confronting the issue and dealing with the issue, maybe looking at it, reframing the issue, looking at it from a different perspective that, you know, maybe it's not as bad as I thought it was. And the other part of it is control, is knowing what you can control and what you can't control, and stop worrying about those things that you can't control that are out of your purview, and concentrate on what you can do.
How do emotional intelligence skills help us make better decisions? And maybe even provide an example if you have one that you can think of.
Yeah, there's a fair bit of research on decision-making and emotional intelligence. There's a study looking at stock traders, for example, showing that those who are not too impulsive, for example, or are more patient, tend to make better stock trades. So what it does is it allows you to be less impulsive, to sort of think your way through making decisions. It helps you gauge reality better. You know, some people are clouded by what they wish the world was as opposed to what it really is. So being able to manage your emotions helps you be more patient, to look at reality, be more realistic in how you approach the world. And it helps you become a better problem solver because you're better at not just looking at the logical aspect of each choice, but looking at the emotional aspect of each choice.
Yeah, that stock trading example is an interesting one. That totally makes sense to me. And I think you even mentioned like high performance athletes too. I would imagine emotional intelligence is so key, especially when there's like rapid decision making happening all the time. I'm sure emotional intelligence skills are pretty key to their success.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge part of it. And some of the high performance athletes, and I might document some in the book, I think some professional tennis players, is getting up for the game, even if you don't feel like it today, it's not your day, or it's windy out there. How do I deal with these external things that I really don't have any control over? So for athletes, emotional intelligence has become really important in high performance.
So with emotional intelligence, like development within ourselves and obviously our teams, is this a individual issue or is it a workplace issue? Like, I just don't know if early on, if like schools are teaching our kids how to become more emotionally intelligent, and maybe just give me your perspective on where we're at as a society.
Yeah, well, that's one of the great things about it, actually, is that it spills over from the workplace to home or vice versa. Schools are a great place. There's been some terrific programs. I know it's fairly controversial these days, but there have been some really good programs. There's some bad programs as well. But some of the good programs have shown some incredible changes in schools and school areas in terms of drug use, in terms of physical altercations, bullying. Some of these issues get dealt with by good emotional intelligence programs. Unfortunately, some not so good ones have led to some controversy, and people are trying to legislate against this kind of thing in some school districts.
Oh, gosh. Where do you think like we would go as a society, as workplaces, as individuals, if we continued to work on our emotional intelligence skills? Like, what? Paint me a picture.
Well, I think I'd get a lot better. I mean, for one thing is, you know, we like to say TGIM, you know, thank God it's Monday. We want people to be happy when the week starts and they're going to work, right? It's not about Friday and the weekend's coming. It's about I really enjoy work. I enjoy the people I work with. I enjoy the work that I'm doing. I'm really contributing. You know, we've been working in our own organization at building that kind of culture for the last 40 years that we've been doing it. And we have an amazing culture where even remotely people rate themselves as really being part of a team and enjoying working with the other people. And they're, you know, they're effective and they get things done. And that's the kind of workplace we want to see, where it's not about politics, it's not about conflict, it's about you know, who can we work with together, and how much can we accomplish, and how do we reach those goals, and how do we have a good time getting there?
You'd said that with developing yourself with emotional intelligence, coaching is a good way of doing that in the workplace. Is the one-on-one, like a manager-employee one-on-one, a good place to do that?
You know, there's room for some discussion of this with manager and one-on-one, but it's often better to get someone outside. Because if you're having a problem with your manager, it's going to be a bit tricky, right? And you don't want to divulge too much personal information to your manager in many cases. So ideally, you have someone outside that you can talk to, and they can help you deal with your manager better or be more productive at work. It just seems to be the way that we've seen works better.
If you could talk to the employers right now and say, like, you need to structure your ongoing development for emotional intelligence in this way, like, how would you frame that up? Like, what's the blueprint?
Well, the first thing is to learn, you know, just learn, read about it, start with articles if you want, get into a book, get into some YouTube videos, just learn what it's all about and see which parts of it sort of speak to you and which parts maybe don't speak to you, and just work your way through the models and what they offer. And then maybe involve somebody, get an expert in there to come and give a talk at your organization and tell you more about what it's about. You know, we certify people throughout the world, actually, in terms of teaching these skills in organizations. and yet someone who's knowledgeable and properly trained in what it's about. And that starts you on your journey where you get to learn more about yourself and people around you and see actual changes. We've seen amazing changes in individuals and organizations.
Now I got to ask you, like, what is that process of writing a For Dummies book? It seems so comprehensive. Your book is packed with information, and like literally if somebody really wants to dive into this subject, your book is a really good place to start because it's got everything. But what's that process like?
Well, they got a very successful formula. They really tell me, you know, that they outline, this is what we want, fill in all these things. And the way they described it to me was that it's not really like for dummies. What it's for is, let's say you're a brain surgeon, but you know nothing about golf, right? And you want to start from the beginning. So that's who you're writing for. You know, you're writing for someone who's actually really smart, but it's in a topic or subject area that they don't know. They've never really looked into before. So you want to take them from ground zero right to the top. So you can see in the book that we cover many different areas, whether it's workplace, leadership, families, children, parenting. So, you know, and we start very simply. And then, you know so much by the time you finished it, you're almost like an expert.
It's so interesting you say that because I've read several For Dummies books cover to cover. Years ago, I had read, I think it was Excel and Dashboard for Dummies. And I read it cover to cover doing the exercises. And I'm like, I'm smart, but I was not an expert in Excel. And now I'm like seen as an expert in dashboards and reports for some reason. And I really attribute it to the For Dummies book and the model. So I agree. Like if somebody's wanting to really learn emotional intelligence from the ground up, your book is a great place to start.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, Steve. This has been a really fun discussion. What do you want to like leave people with as kind of a parting thought or even point people to what you want to point them to?
Well, the parting thought really is probably your first step in becoming more emotionally intelligent is to learn how to listen. Listen to other people, people around you, whether it's your supervisor, subordinates, whether it's your kids. Listen to them, see where they're coming from. If you're interested in learning more about this topic, visit one of my websites, whether it's mhs.com or stevenstein.com, and learn more about emotional intelligence.
My guest today has been Dr. Steven Stein. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. Enjoyed speaking with you, Brandon.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning in for today's episode of Transform Your Workplace. The content on this show is strictly for general information and educational purposes only, so that you can go transform your workplace in a positive way. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are the guest's own and don't represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of either Zenium HR, the sponsor of the show, or me, the host, Brandon Laws. Additionally, Zenium HR or myself, Brandon Laws, doesn't endorse any guest, their business, or any organization they represent. So discretion is advised. We encourage you to work with a trusted advisor to find a custom approach that fits your organization's needs. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode.